Hello and welcome to this special bonus episode of the Retro Asylum. My name's Dean Swain, and in a few minutes' time, I'll be speaking to Oliver Harper, who is a successful YouTuber, writer, and director. He is currently making a documentary on Street Fighter 2 called Here Comes a New Challenger. So in a few minutes' time, we'll be going to that. But first of all, I just want to mention our Christmas episode, which is the next episode out. That should be released on Christmas Eve, and it really is a bumper episode. It's over 5 hours of entertainment. We don't expect you to listen to it in one sitting. This is something to listen to over the Christmas period. Anyway, more on that later, but now over to the Oliver Harper interview. So, hello and welcome to Oliver Harper to the Retro Asylum.
Hello there, how you doing?
Not bad at all, Oliver. Now, for the sake of our listeners who don't know who you are, could you just explain, because you're from the YouTube community mainly, I think most people will know you, but if you can just explain how you got into doing your videos and what's inspired you over the years.
Well, I started YouTube in late 2011. I just sort of been made redundant that year, pretty early that year. I was working as a projectionist for Cineworld, and they did the whole switcheroo from 35mm projectors to digital projection. So there's no need for, you know, projectionists anymore. So I was kind of a little bit like, oh, what am I going to do? I got, you know, a decent sort of redundancy package, which was quite handy. So it sort of gave me the time to sort of think, okay, what shall I do next? And I'd been watching YouTube, like many people, and watching movie reviews. And the state of movie reviews at the time was generally kind of bashing movies and for comedic value, which kind of worked. And it was fun. And but to me, it wasn't something I wanted to see all the time. It was, in my eyes, I wanted something a little bit more educational.
Yeah.
And I'd been obsessed with sort of DVD special features and even got into Laserdisc at the time, well, maybe a decade earlier, when DVD sort of arrived and it was too expensive. I went, right, I'm going to get Laserdisc when everyone was selling it off cheap, you know. So I wanted the sort of educational sort of twist to a movie review. And I did a review on Superman 4, which is not a good film, but a sort of guilty pleasure, and has a sort of...
You're a big fan of the Superman series, aren't you?
I grew up with
Christopher Reeves.
Yeah, the Chris Reeve films. I loved those as a kid. The first movie is one of my favourite films of all time. Yeah. And so discussing Superman 4 was sort of a guilty pleasure. It has an interesting production. It's often with movies that are bad, they often have great sort of production stories behind the scenes. And, you know, I did it with little to no experience, you know, this YouTube thing, and not really the confidence to sort of do voiceover. But the more you do it, the better you get, the more confident you get. And I started after about 2 or 3 years, I'd produced enough retrospectives. I built up a fairly sizable audience at the time, maybe about 20,000 subscribers, which was pretty good, like 2013. And there's an opportunity there to sort of make money from my videos. And I took that opportunity because work wasn't going where I wanted it to go, and I started to make a living out of it. So I thought, wow, you know, instead of this being just a hobby to sort of, you know, do a video once every other week, it became this kind of chance to have a business. And so over the years, I've continued with it and built up a fairly sizable audience now, and have a great community. And did other things like audio commentaries with friends, and dabbled with the sort of let's plays with sort of video games with us on a separate channel. And I got an opportunity through a friend of mine called Robin Block, who at Creative VC gave me the opportunity to sort of direct this documentary called In Search of the Last Action Hero, sort of detailing action films of the 80s and the 90s. And which did, you know, very well. It got very well reviewed. And so during that process, I was sort of thinking about another project, which was on Street Fighter 2.
Yeah. And you're a big fan of Street Fighter 2?
Oh, yeah. I was obsessed with it. The weird thing is, because I've reviewed movies, you know, mainly on my YouTube channel, I always discuss video games in a sort of capacity where there's a movie licensed video game, for example. But as a kid, you know, I was enjoying movies like Star Wars, Superman, Ghostbusters, and so forth. But in a lot of my free time, as you do as a kid, you have plenty of free time, I was playing video games. And I grew up with a Commodore 64, and my father bought me the Terminator 2 bundle pack with the cartridge, you know. I think I had asked for a Master System because there was a Superman game on it. My dad goes, my dad went out and just got me a Commodore, and which was on its kind of last legs anyway, in like 92, you know.
So was that the actual Commodore 64 computer, or was it the console version?
It was the computer. It was, the white one, wasn't it? Which, it came with the cartridge version of T2. But I had a friend down the road. He had an older brother who had a Commodore 64, an earlier model, but he had the tape deck and the disc drive, and my dad purchased those off him. So I had loads of games within a short space of time. So, but most of the games he had were all, was all copied, you know. So
like they were back then.
Yeah, yeah. So I did have some original boxes like Batman and Robocop. And Robocop, I was always so angry with because I could never get past the.
That was very hard on the C64.
The fourth level, you ran out of time. It's a huge bug in the game.
It turns out it was bugged and you couldn't complete it. They've only, I think, a couple of years ago released a patched version.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? I can't believe they never even tested it, did they?
No, just rushed it out.
Yeah, and it sold extremely well. I think people would have said, you know, very shortly afterwards, well, the game's bugged. It doesn't work, you know.
Yeah. Well, it was great on the Spectrum and Amstrad, so...
Yes, the Speccy version especially. But some these great music. So during that time, you know, I made a leap to sort of the Sega Mega Drive, I believe. Yeah. But I think around that time, though, when Street Fighter 2 hit the scene in the arcades, it was I always heard about it through friends or seeing bits in magazines because I lived in a village in Cambridgeshire, and there wasn't that many arcades around. You'd have to wait for the fair to come to your town, and they'd have arcades there, and that's where I experienced Street Fighter 2 really in the arcade for the first time. And it was like the Champion Edition, which had the four new bosses you could play as.
Yeah.
But it was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. It was like you had combos, you had all these special moves, fighting games beforehand. You know, they were very simple, but some were really good, like IK Plus on the Amiga I played.
Yeah,
I think there's Way of Exploding Fist, I think, I played on the Speccy. So they're very sort of rudimentary, kind of simple things. But this offered something more. You had combos and, you know, colourful characters with detailed animation and wonderful music. And that sort of my addiction to that game sort of just kicked into fifth gear, you know.
Yeah. How far could you get in the game when you first started playing it?
Oh, I was useless. Absolutely useless. You know, it was, I just chose a character which I thought looked cool, and that was Vega with the claw and mask. And I didn't know any special moves at the time. It was just like, just go hell for leather, you know, and see how far you could get. But I think I sort of moved into playing with characters like Ryu and Ken, where you had the fireballs and dragon punches, and it was just kind of easier to sort of do the combos. The hero characters, as it were. So that was it. That was my addiction kicked in. And I went when Street Fighter 2 came to the Mega Drive, because I couldn't afford a Super Nintendo. I couldn't, you know, that £160 with Street Fighter 2 that came bundled with it. But as a kid on pocket money, that would take forever. Or you could wait till Christmas and ask for it for Christmas. But I think doing that sort of that circle of time, it came out in the Mega Drive like 93, I think. And I just rented it every week from my local video store. So, you know, I didn't have £50 to put down. That was it. And then I got the strategy guide, and then reading the magazines every week, because magazines were only like £2.50. So that's enough pocket money to get a new magazine, because there were so many video game magazines. It was like oversaturation. So you had like, you know, Mii Machine, CVG, Sega Pro, Sega Power, you know, all this stuff. So I was getting them all because it had Street Fighter 2 on the front cover, you know, such a sap, you know, just falling for it. So that was, you know, I followed Street Fighter throughout those sort of, you know, over the next few years, where you had all the updates to the game, Turbo and Super, then it was Super Turbo, and then the live action movie, so which was kind of a, you know, a guilty pleasure now, but at the time it was just like, what the hell is this, you know, because I was a bit surprised by the casting of Jean-Claude as Guile and Kylie Minogue. I was like, what, Kylie for Neighbours, really, you know. Okay, but yeah, it's one of those weird films where I watched it and walked out and my friend was like, I don't know if I like that movie. You know, everyone was kind of mixed on it. They didn't know if they liked it or hated it. And I think after a while, after it settled down, most of them hated it. But for me, it was Street Fighter, and I was just a gullible kid and just liked everything Street Fighter related. So I kind of just like pretended the movie was amazing.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking as someone who was a little bit older at the time, it was absolutely huge in the arcades. It was in every kebab shop, chip shop, minicab office, news agents, as well as your normal arcades. I lived in East London at the time, and we'd go up to Tottenham Court Road where there was some big arcades, and there was queues. You know, they had a few machines. It was absolutely unbelievable because the arcade scene, it had been dying down up until that point. Now, have you played the first game, and what do you think of it?
I played Street Fighter 1 very much kind of years later, because when Street Fighter 2 arrived, I was like, where's this Street Fighter 1? I'd not seen it at that time, because it was an older game. You know, if I saw it in the Commodore 64, for example, it would have been like in a W.H. Smith, one of those sorts of little spiral stands they had. We kind of rotate around. But it was, I'd never heard of it, never seen it. I saw screenshots of the PC Engine version called Fighting Street. That's right, yeah.
That's it, yeah.
And it looked kind of interesting, but once you saw it being played, it didn't work at all, because it was a very stiff kind of fighting game. The special moves were impossible to pull off.
Yeah.
And it just didn't play very well. It looked nice. It looked the part. I liked all the look of the bonus stages and so forth. But this is obviously with the arcade version, but when you saw that the home ports on the micro computers, it just...
Yeah, they were converted by Tiertex for US gold, so it was never really stood a chance anyway. But
they did they did a sort of sequel to Strider, didn't they, on the Mega Drive, I think?
Yes, they did. And they actually done a follow-up to Street Fighter called Human Fighting Machine, or Human Killing Machine, sorry.
That's right. It was terrible, wasn't it?
It was awful. And that was like a stripped-back version of their Street Fighter. It didn't even scroll, I don't think. It was just on a static background for each level. And yeah, that was really poor.
So I never really got into the first game. I've gone back to it a few times to try to sort of, you know, capture footage for certain videos, but it was never that appealing because of how it played. So with Street Fighter 2 around, it was always just like everyone's kind of forgot about the first game because it didn't really do that well. And that's why Capcom went back to it, you know, sort of improve upon the formula and try and sell the franchise again. But as you were saying, because you were, you know, born in, well, you lived in East London, did you sort of experience the sort of the craze of Sega World and the arcade scene there? Because the mid 90s was just this, you know, London had everything.
You had the Trocaderos, Sega World and everything. But being in East London as well, I could go to South End and, you know, various places, obviously summer holidays, places, you know, like the Isle of Wight and wherever. The arcades were always busy. I mean, the biggest hit that I remember previous to Street Fighter was probably the Double Dragon craze, but it wasn't on the same kind of level. You know, the promotional side for Street Fighter 2 was huge. Every magazine started featuring it, and not just for a review or a preview. It was in there all the time, hints and tips. It made the cover of so many different magazines and different issues of those magazines. It was unbelievable. My problem was that I didn't own a SNES or a Mega Drive. I had to make do with the Amiga conversion, which was awful. That was by a company called Creative Materials. They were formerly Binary Design. And from memory, it came on a few discs. You had to keep swapping the discs over, depending on what stage you're playing or what character you picked. One button control, half the game was missing, as in frames of animation.
Yeah.
It was a big letdown. But there was various versions released for the Amiga, and they were all pretty poor, unfortunately.
Yeah, I experienced Street Fighter 2 on the Amiga around a friend's house, and as a kid, it kind of looked the part, but once the sprites started moving, you thought, oh, okay, this is the problem, you know, and the constant disc swapping. Because I had Street Fighter 2 on the Commodore 64. That was the first version.
What did you think of that?
oh God, it was absolutely awful. But as a kid, you sort of just make do with what you've got.
Yeah.
And my friend had an Amiga, and he came around and goes, oh, this looks terrible, because he had the Amiga version. But in his eyes, it was, you know, on the Amiga, it was far better, which it kind of was. It played better, despite the sort of, you know, shonky kind of gameplay. Yeah. But the Commodore one was just dog's dinner. It was a waste of time. And it sold well, though. And I found some old Commodore format reviews, and some gave it sort of really kind of strong reviews.
I think there was a lot of bribery going on with some of the magazines back then.
It wouldn't surprise me.
And to be honest, US Gold probably could have just released blank tapes and they would have sold with that name on, you know.
Yeah.
They would have done. If they could have got away with it, I'm sure they would have done.
Well, because they did that with Street Fighter 1, didn't they? On yeah, side they, 2, they had the US version, which was programmed by a different company.
That's right, yeah, on the C64, yeah. Yeah. It was a bit nicer. Street Fighter 2. Final Fight in development was actually called Street Fighter 2.
Well, it was called Street Fighter 89.
Oh, that was
it?
Right, yeah.
That's right, yeah. I don't know why they thought that, because maybe they just thought, okay, Street Fighter is going to take a different direction, because, as you said, you know, with in terms of Double Dragon and the craze for that. And then I think by, what, Final Fight, there was already, like, there was already two. I think the sequel to Double Dragon was out, wasn't it?
Yes,
I think the third one arrived to like the early 90s.
No. Less said about that, the better.
Yeah, exactly. So Final Fight 89, or aka Final Fight, as it were. That game, I mean, that game obviously sold extremely well, but they obviously, it was such a different game to what Street Fighter 1 was. So.
I guess the only likeness really was that the characters were quite large.
Yeah. It's all the same hardware as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which I was sort of testing the ground with. And obviously those characters would come back into Street Fighter. So it's all set in the same universe, as it were, you know, because Mike Hagar is a former Street Fighter.
That's
you know.
Right, yeah.
But he didn't really pop up in Street Fighter till a lot.
It was a lot later, wasn't it?
You know, something like that. But yeah, I adored Final Fight as well, because I still love scrolling beat 'em ups along with one-on-one fighters. With Streets of Rage 2 probably being my favourite of the sort of side-scrolling beat 'em ups, or brawlers they call it now.
Yeah. So tell us more about this documentary and what we can expect from it.
Yes, so yeah, it's called Here Comes a New Challenger, which will sort of detail the origins of Street Fighter 2, its cultural impact, how people sort of reacted to it at the time, exploring the merchandise, the action figures, you know, the endless kind of magazines and sticker albums, players' guides, talk about the anime and the live action film, and of course the various updates to the game over that sort of from like 91 to sort of 94 period. The bootleg versions, like the Black Belt edition, which, as you were saying earlier, about the sort of Street Fighter 2 turning up in, you know, chip shops and so forth.
There were always few of them were the official version.
Exactly. You had Ryu doing like 50 fireballs at once, whatever, you know, and we'd like the characters would be teleporting around the screen. And also, you know, talking about the home conversions as well, which I always thought I always find quite fascinating, really. I like sort of, you know, looking into how, because at the time, you know, Street Fighter 2 was seen as this arcade perfect conversion on the Super Nintendo. But when you put them side by side, they look a lot different in terms of like the quality of the graphics. But I suppose intent, you know, the gameplay is still intact, which is why they call it arcade perfect. So yeah, exploring all the various conversions to the home consoles and the microcomputers as well. So there's been a few Street Fighter documentaries over the years. There's been a couple, I think one for the 15th anniversary and one for the 25th.
Right.
And for its 30th anniversary, celebrating Street Fighter 1, I suppose, 30th anniversary, they didn't do one for that time. But so this one's kind of falling in line with the 30th anniversary of Street Fighter 2 for next year. But the previous documentaries often explored the tournament aspect to a great extent, which my one will do, but I think it won't be its main focus, because the previous ones focused very much on the sort of esports angle, which I still think is very niche in terms of for many people to sort of experience the home, the tournament itself as a kid growing up, or a teenager, or, you know, someone in their early 20s, the tournament would often be the bedroom or the lounge. You know, you have your friends over and you play it at home, and it wasn't in the arcade to a certain extent. So it's more coming from that angle, instead of being someone who was just living in the arcades all the time and just playing it there. There's going to be obviously a crossover of that, but it's more focused on really kind of the general consumer who sort of experienced it for the first time and, you know, and got wrapped up in it. So yeah, it's more of a celebration of that time and not the sort of, you know, the super fine detailed, you know, explanations of how the characters fight and move. It's more of a celebration of the game and a sort of nostalgic look back to sort of the early 90s of arcades and home video gaming.
Great. So this is a Kickstarter project. When does the funding need to be raised by? Is there a date?
It'll be the 3rd of January.
So
yeah, so it's maybe it was a strange move on my behalf, I suppose, to sort of do a Kickstarter during December. But it was, you know, it's very difficult to sort of determine if people have the money to spend on something that won't come out till later next year. So it's, but you know, obviously difficult times at the moment with the pandemic, and people have less money to spend on things. So I can sort of, you know, see it as like, oh, okay, it may be a little bit difficult to, for some people to support a project and rather spend the money on Christmas presents, which is probably a good idea. But, but you know, people are still forking out loads of money for big consoles, so it's always a a difficult decision to run a Kickstarter, not know the sort of, you know, if or not it's going to work. But I think, you know, at the moment it's doing okay with the Kickstarter. So I'll have more sort of promotional stuff coming up, and I'm getting more names involved as well, which is wonderful. So there's, you know, there's a lot of people from Capcom USA we're interviewing obviously journalists from the time, such as Paul Davis and Julian Rignall
from CMVG,
CVG and Mean Machines and so forth, and Ryan Hart, a professional gamer in the UK, who's a, you know, world renowned for playing Street Fighter. So there's a, you know, if you check out the Kickstarter, I'm sure there'll be a link somewhere, and you
yeah
can,
we'll put a link in the show notes.
So there'll be you know, more information you can delve deep into there. So yeah, this is, you know, a sort of a passion project for me, because when I was doing the action documentary, in the back of my mind I was like, I want to explore Street Fighter at some point, because as I said earlier, with the other documentaries around, that they didn't really connect with me in a nostalgic way. So for this is to really sort of tap into my generation. So I think all of us are kind of, even though if you weren't interested in video games at the time, I think Street Fighter still found its way into your daily life, you know, as it were. So you couldn't escape it.
I think it'd be nice to see it from a UK perspective as well, because a lot of these other documentaries have been, you know, from elsewhere in the world.
Yeah, it's always difficult to sort of find that balancing act, because you talk about video games and their history. If you do it from the American perspective, it's very limited compared to the European. It's always important to have both sides of the coin, but it's funny where in America it had this sort of video game crash, and where over here we didn't experience any of that. It was, you know, people were happily playing the Spectrum and the Commodore, and so there wasn't this kind of, you know, the well didn't dry on video games. You know, there's always stuff to play. I mean, I'm speaking about this in sort of like a different perspective, because I was born in 82. I was nowhere aware of what was going on until about 88 or something. You know, when you're about 6 years old, you become self-aware of what's happening. But so in terms of like, you know, a European perspective, it's tackling, you know, the US and Europe. So Europe is very much a sort of an important point of it. I wouldn't want it just to, you know, just be one-sided. But so yeah, in terms of documentaries and so forth, it's always a shame when especially the UK side is kind of left out in terms of that nostalgia. It's just like, you know, Atari, NES, Mega Drive, SNES. It's you're missing loads of stuff in between them. And I mean, I suppose the best one is that Bedrooms
to Billions.
Yeah, that was a fascinating documentary. That's really, really good. And that's, you know, if anyone wanted to do a documentary about video games of a whole history, that's, you've got, you know, tough competition. Because that really sort of, you know, knocked it out of the park by providing a really strong side for the Europe and addressing the US as well.
Cool. It's obviously a passion project. Are there any other video games that you'd like to cover at some point?
That's a good question. I don't really know, really. I thought about, what am I going to do after this? There's always something else. You always have another idea burning. Maybe something less specific. Maybe something more sort of generalized. But it's hard to know. I mean, I enjoyed Mortal Kombat when that came out. Yeah. But it wasn't, I don't think my passion for it was a strong Street Fighter.
No, it's a very different game. I've heard Street Fighter 2 described as like a game of chess. I mean, I was never any good at it, any more than four buttons on a game, and my little brain couldn't cope. But watching someone who is good at the game, especially if you get, you know, two people on an arcade cab or in front of a SNES or Mega Drive, whatever, watching them battle it out, you know, it's fascinating to watch. I think it's one of those games you, as a spectator, can watch, whereas with Mortal Kombat, obviously the series did progress, but the first couple, you know, that was fairly limited in what you could do.
Yeah. It very much relied on the gore factor, and that's what drew people to it, especially young lads, you know, who wanted to, be able to rip someone's head off, you know, set someone on fire. But the gameplay was so much more simplistic.
Yeah.
Street Fighter was always deeper, and it had deeper gameplay, you know, even when the 3D fighting games turned up on the scene, like Virtual Fighter and Tekken, they were still, I suppose, going with the idea that they were taking a serious direction with the fighting styles, but compared to the Street Fighter, there's so much more to learn, I think, at the time. Obviously, those fighting games progressed and they became more advanced. And so, as you say, got Mortal Kombat. You know, the later versions are very impressive,
yeah,
both graphically and with their gameplay. But Street Fighter at its core was always just like, you know, you can pick up and play it, but to master it took a lot of time. And And as a kid, you have that time.
it's something I wish I still had.
yeah. So many games I had, you know, you'd buy, you spend your money on, even though it might not be very good, but you put the time into it and you spent your weeks on end playing it and you finally completed it. When you go back to it as an adult, you think, how did I complete this game? This game's impossibly hard. But as an 8-year-old, you just whizzed through it. The time and dedication.
Yeah. Right, so as a fan of film and games, what is your favourite game to movie?
Oh, that's a good one. Okay.
Is it Street Fighter?
No. So game to movie. That's I would probably say, I mean, Silent Hill was pretty good with its sort of translating the video game to film. I mean, story-wise, it's not spectacular. I might say Mortal Kombat. Mortal Kombat, the movie, essentially is Enter the Dragon.
Yeah.
But it had, you know, good casting, had great music, good fight scenes. CGI was a bit wonky. I mean, even as a kid or teenager, I snuck into that movie when I was 13.
Right.
Films are 50. But yeah, I was kind of wowed by this, like the action and the editing and the visual flair of it, where Street Fighter was far more corny and cheeseball. But I suppose Street Fighter the movie had the sort of wonderful performance of Raul Julia,
yeah.
Which kind of I always compared to Frank Langella from He-Man the movie, yep. You know, just a complete scene stealer. Mm. I mean, there's been a few other, obviously, it's been quite a few sort of video game to movies, like the Resident Evil films. I mean, they're pure schlock and they can be enjoyed for that, but they're not good movies.
No.
And as Double Dragon, the movie, of course,
I've never watched it. I could never bring myself to watch it because I just
knew it was gonna be awful. As a fan of Double Dragon, you should have seen it.
I know. I will have to put myself through it one day. The last one I watched was with my son, because I've got an 8-year-old son and he loves Rampage.
Oh, yes. I saw that. Yeah. I mean, the film was a bit...
Oh, it's a bit...
Why did they make it? You know, I was thinking to myself, why did they make a movie based on a really old
video game?
Well,
it's quite an obscure game now as well. I wouldn't have thought, you know, modern audiences would know about the game at all. So, I mean, it's very loosely based. You see the arcade cab in a couple of scenes, but...
Yeah. I think they do that in Double Dragon, the movie. There's an arcade in the background. That's about it. Right. Just sort of say, oh, it's Double Dragon. You know, I think there's Tomb Raider as well. I mean, the most recent Tomb Raider film was kind of okay. The thing is, they're all just okay. They're never just like, wow, like amazing. Because it's such a difficult thing to translate. So, I mean, there's talk of a Resident Evil TV series in Raccoon City, which might be interesting. If you played Resident Evil, the remake on the GameCube, if that was put onto film, I think that would do well. Because the story they expanded and additional kind of diary notes they have in it, you could explore with flashbacks and it could work. Mm. But Mortal Kombat takes number one spot.
Yeah. I've got one final question for you. Is there a game that you would like to write a script for to make into a movie?
Oh,
I know it's a tough one. It puts you on the spot.
It's a tough one. Yeah. I have to look at my games now and try and think what I've played that would make a great movie. I suppose The Last of Us, wouldn't it, would be
a good movie.
Because it is essentially a movie, isn't it?
So that's the thing with a lot of the modern games. They are more interactive movies these days.
Yeah, yeah. It's the evolution of the FMV game, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, Last of Us, because it is an interesting story, and I think it would work as a movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it's just the same, if you're seeing the same cutscenes as a movie, then you think, what makes it different to the game?
What is the
apart
point?
From losing that interaction. So yeah, that's always going to be the problematic thing, is losing that interaction with that experience. But yeah, probably that.
Cool. Right. Well, thanks for coming on, and good luck with the Kickstarter. We'll do our best to promote it. So if any of our listeners are interested, which I'm sure they will be, because Street Fighter is still absolutely huge, then please do back this project. Thank you very much, Oliver.
Thank you very much for your time, sir.
Thank you. And hopefully we can get you on in the future at some point.
Love to. Cool. Been great talking to you.
Yeah, you too. Okay, mate. Take care.
Come on, hobbitses. Follow Smeagol, good Smeagol. Games. Oh, he loves his games. But we hate his retro games. No, we don't. He loves his retro games. No, we hate it. We hate it. The pixel count. No, we love the pixel count. Smeagol loves pixels. No.
Well, there you go. What a great guest Oliver was. I really enjoyed that. And although I'm not the biggest Street Fighter 2 fan, you can't deny its legacy, and I think it will make a fantastic documentary. Oliver's work is very slick, so if that does reach its backing, you know, the funding, then I think that will be something to look out for in the future. Talking of the future, the new episode will be out in a couple of days' time, so please do download it. It is a big one, and again, I think you're going to enjoy it. Anyway, until next time, guys, take care, stay safe, and keep it retro.